For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. For those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it so that he can continue that site.
Okay, so I'd like to discuss tonight, through the Rosh Hashiva's eyes, the nature of Lot, and particularly the conflicted nature of Lot. Lot really appears in two separate parshios, in this week's parsha and Lach Lecha, next week's parsha Vayera. One of the advantages of going through the parshios every year, after year, after year, you become familiar with the stories, and they actually just blend together. So even though we're going to be going back and forth, even as I was doing this, I got confused, like, which week does that happen and before and what? But it's all a couple of different aspects, and we'll jump around a little bit through the personality of Lot to get some insights both into him and then how that impacts us. I'd like to start with this week's parsha. Even though it's a pasuk from last week's parsha, that's just confusing. In any case, in this week's parsha, Lech Lecha, the aspects of Lot that we'll come across are several. The main one is on Avraham and Sarah's ascent back out of Mitzrayim, where they go because of the famine that they discover when they arrive in the land of Eretz Yisrael. They're told to leave. Lech Lecha me'artacha. He comes, Avraham with Sarah, to their land. And then right away there's a famine. They go down to Mitzrayim, to Paro. Sarah is taken. They end up coming back with great riches. On their way back, we have the classic fight between Avraham's shepherds and Lot's shepherds, and that eventually leads to a split, and then there's a war in this week's parsha. Lot is captured. Avraham goes and recaptures Lot. That's all the primary aspect of this week's parsha. The split that resulted, or the result of the split that they had, is that Lot ends up settling in Sodom. And then in next week's parsha, that's what we pick up with when Avraham is recovering from his Rishmila. The Malachim come and tell him they're going to destroy Sodom, and then we have that whole episode in next week's parsha. Those are the episodes that are going to end up going back and forth. When Sodom is destroyed, we'll see inside in a few minutes, Hashem describes one of the psukim that Hashem remembers Avraham, and Lot is saved. Let's start with that measure. So Ayhi, it's on the top of page 1. Vayhi b'shacheis Elokim esareya kikar, in the destruction when Hashem destroyed the plains of the twin cities of the plain of Kikar. Vayiskar Elokim es Avraham, vayishlach es Lot mitocho hafecha. Hashem remembered Avraham, and he sent Lot from amidst the upheaval. So you have this pasuk that in the midst of the destruction, Hashem remembered Avraham, and he sent out Lot. And the Medrash picks up on the strange wording of Hashem remembering Avraham and sending Lot out of the destruction. Ma zechira nizkar lo. What remembrance did, that should be a capital H in the English if you're looking at that, what remembrance did Hashem remember about Avraham? Shtika sheshosak la'Avraham. The silence that Lot had when it came to Avraham. The first episode that we have in this week's parsha, after Avraham and Sarah return to the land, they go down to Mitzrayim. And what happens when they get down to Mitzrayim? So Avraham realizes how beautiful his wife is, and he says, this is going to be a problem. They're going to take you. It's going to be a disaster. Why don't you just tell everybody that you're my sister? So what's not often recounted about that story is that there was another person present when that whole episode took place. It was not just Avraham and Sarah traveling alone to Mitzrayim. They were with someone. That's right. They went with Lot. They went with Lot down to Mitzrayim. And when this whole thing happens, Avraham tells Sarah, tell him that you're my sister. Sarah does the whole thing. That's what happens. Says the Medrash, somebody was there and didn't say anything. Says the Medrash, Mazchira nizkalo shtika sheshosak la'Avraham. The silence that Lot had for Avraham. Bishah sha'omer Avraham al Sara achosihi. The time, the moment when Avraham said, she's my sister. Haya Lot yodea vishosek. Lot knew, she's not your sister. And Lot didn't say anything. That's the Medrash. Couple of questions. Why, anything bother you on such a Medrash?
Well, just Shem remembered Avraham, but really Shem remembered
Okay, so that's a textual question on the pasuk that the Chazal are coming from. It says Hashem remembered Avram. It's as if the Medrash is reading it. Hashem remembered what Lot did for Avraham. That's as if how they're reading it, and therefore this is what they came up with. Let's just go through some scenarios. What would have happened had Lot not been silent? What's our alternative? Lot goes down and Avram says, gives her a little nudge, and she says, "Is my brother." And Lot says, "That's not her brother. They're married. What would happen next?
Killed Avram.
Exactly. Exactly what Avram was afraid of.
They
were taking Sarah, killed Avram. So, okay, in Lot's mind, we're looking for a big schus for Lot here, right? What merit did Lot have to get out of Sodom? Clearly, Chazal are looking for something. Just being Avraham's nephew didn't cut it because they needed to find something. So what merit did he have? Chazal found it. The merit that he kept his mouth shut in Mitzrayim.
You're saying it benefited him to keep his mouth quiet?
No, I'm saying what was the alternative? What was going on in Lot's mind?
No, there was no alternative. It definitely benefited him unless he was very
realized. Correct.
Opinion where he could have not gone with it.
I would say you're even okay. Okay, either I say something and my uncle and his wife get killed, or I'm silent.
But is he caring about himself?
Either way, how big a schus is this? Either I say something and my uncle gets killed.
He saved Klal Yisrael because Avram is the...
So that's a... In other words, if he's not silent, everybody dies. Is that a massive schus, or like would everybody have done that? Is that a big deal that you would say, whoa, look at Lot. What was your alternative, Lot? Well, I could have said something and everybody dies. So what'd you choose? I chose to keep my mouth shut. Shh, you're a good man, Lot. Real good man.
Well, but you could say that Lot could have had an ulterior motive. Oh, look, I'm the one who told you the truth. You see, they were really your enemy, and now reward me for telling the truth. Even though, and if he didn't care enough about Avram and Sarah that they would die.
Okay, hold on to that thought. A fair thought. But question number one is, if Lot's not silent, it seems like everybody would die. Which, in my mind, would lower how great... how noble this is that we should give him such credit.
Why would Sarah die? They would take her
and Avram would die. And then either way, he's... Question number two is, if we were looking for something else that would stand in Lot's corner, what else do we know about Lot that we should say and point to and say, this guy is something special and deserves to be saved? Next week's Parsha, in between the story of Avraham and him actually getting out of Sodom, when the angels come, he manifests an aspect of himself, which is way beyond what many people would ever go anywhere near, which is at risk of his life in a place where they killed guests and anyone who hosted guests. He goes out, finds them, protects them, and in a warped sense... offers his own daughters to save them.
Not himself.
But he is willing to take in these guests. So Chazal are now looking for, okay, where do we have a merit that Lot should get out of stone? And they go to Mitzrayim, where he was silent, as that is Lot's big schus, and ignore the hachnasas orchim of Lot, which is literally an Avraham-like kind of action. What then is the meaning of such a measure? Yeah.
Well, maybe the fact that he was quiet was something that he learned or did on his own, as opposed to learned from someone else.
Excellent. So let's take a look. Let us take a look. Let's look at some of the other aspects that we know about Sodom. So let's take a look at this action of Lot hosting the Orchim. Thirdly, this is. Source number one is from next week's Parsha Vayavo, Shnei Amalachim Sodoma Be'erev. Now, what I'd like to do is, as we read this, let me read the beginning of Parshas Vayera. You're all familiar with this. It's not in front of you. But I'll just highlight certain aspects before we read what Lot did. This is the beginning of Parshas Vayera. Hashem appears to Avram in Elonei Mamre, in the plains of Mamre. Vayisa Einav, he lifts up his eyes, Vayar, and he sees. And there are people coming towards him. Vayar, vayorotz likrosam. And he runs to greet them. Vayishtachu arza. and he bows down to the ground, and he says, Adonai, my master, he begs and pleads with them, please stay with me. Take water, wash your feet, sit down, I'll give you bread, you'll eat, then you'll go on your way. And then he runs to the Sarah, and they get food ready, and he takes all that thing, they sit down, and they eat. Those are the principal actions. Let's read about Lot. Pick out all the similarities. Vayavo shnei amalachim sedoma be'erev, v'lot yoshev b'shar sedoma. Lot is sitting in the gates. Vayar Lot vayakam likrosam. Lot sees, goes out to greet them. Vayishtachu apayim arza, and bows down before them, literally, word for word, almost, parallel to what Avraham did. Vayomer hineinu Adonai, says to them, my masters. Same language that Avram used. Suruna beisavatram, come to my house. Velinu verachatzu raglechem, you'll come, you'll sleep, you'll wash your feet. Hishkamtim velachtim, then you'll go on your way later. And they say no. And he pressures them, and they come to his house. Vayaslan mishten, he makes them a feast. Matzos safa, he bakes matzos. Vayochelu, and they ate. In which, if you focus on the underlying words that I have, it's literally almost the exact same story as earlier in next week's parsha. That Avraham does. The Medrash picks up and says, well, that's not a coincidence, as you said, that Lot does exactly the way that Avraham does. And in fact, in the Tanchum of the Medrash, in source number 2, says, Amar Shlomo, v'chanoch l'naral pidarko, teach each child, v'machanech them, train them, each one according to his path, gam kiyaz kin lo yasur mimena, so that when he's old, he will not stray from it. Teach the children. If you teach them, that will become ingrained as to who they are, and they'll continue in that path. Says the Medrash, Al Yidei Shegidel Lot, Viveso Shel Avraham, based on the fact, by dint of his growing up in the house of Avraham, Tafas Midosav, he took hold of his traits. Vayishtachu Arza, Kishem Shalasav, he bowed down to the same way Avram did. Vayivzer Baamod, he pressured them. Shalomod Mimaisav Shel Avram. So that you see, he learned well. He grew up in the home of those who were mechabed orchim, honored guests, who brought them in. And what happens in such a home? You learn how to treat guests. And he paralleled, literally, that which Avraham did. And the Medrash picks up on that, and it's all very nice. Fine, that's one aspect of Lot, which he does. Learned, trained, and inculcated within himself the traits of Avraham. There's another aspect of Lot, which we find. And we're going to shift now into another aspect of the story, and that is when they come out of Mitzrayim, they're very wealthy. Lot and Avram both are kaved me'od, they're heavy, literally, with stuff. And as the psukim described in source number 3, v'gam l'lot ha'olechas Avram ha'yetzonu v'kar v'ohalim. Not just Avram, but Lot also is described as being very wealthy. V'lo naso som ha'aretz l'sheves yachtov, the land couldn't hold them. Ki haya rechushom rav v'lo yochlu l'sheves yachtov. So what's the problem that they have, Lot and Avram? What's the source, if we have to pinpoint, why couldn't they live together?
Too much stuff.
Too much stuff. Too much money. Too much cattle. Land is expanding. We're talking about two people living in the land right now. There are two of them. It's not
a lot of grass, doesn't it?
Right? How many? They took land, animals out of it. How many animals did they take? Let's say it was a lot. It's a country. It's a small country. It's a country. The land couldn't stand to be together. Vayihi Riv, and the Torah describes, as we're familiar, the real problem was the fight. Bein Roe Mikne Avram, Uvein Roe Mikne Lot. Between the shepherds of Avraham and the shepherds of Lot, Vaknani Vaprizi Oz Yoshev Baaretz. So Chazal pick up the back half of the pasuk of the fight is that the Kanani and the Prizi were still dwelling in the land. There was a fight between the shepherds. What's the fight about between the shepherds? Chazal say a little differently. In effect, Chazal say as follows. Correct. Top of page 2, Rashi says, two important Rashis. Haholechas Avram, Lot, who traveled with Avram, Migoram Shahaisa Lozos, who caused that Lot had all of this stuff? Halichaso im Avram. The Torah introduces the parsha that Lot had a lot of stuff because he was with Avram, so that when they left Mitzrayim, he also was given all of these gifts, and he has lots of stuff. What's the fight about? Rashi explains as follows. Vishahoyu royim shalot rishoyim. Lot's shepherds were all wicked. Umarim behemtam besados acherim. And they would allow the animals to graze in other people's lands. So Avram's animals were all muzzled, and they would only graze in public property, and Lot's were letting his shepherds were letting his animals graze wherever they wanted. And the shepherds of Avram were chastising them and rebuking them. This is not your land. You can't take this. Vehema Omrum, and they said as follows. Now listen to this claim. Let's work through this logic, how this fits. Nosno ha'aretz la'Avram. Lot's shepherd said, well, wait a minute. This land was just promised to Avram.
It was promised to his descendants.
Velo ein yorish. And he doesn't have any children. Right? At this point in time, it's still just Avraham and Sarah. They don't have any children. And Avram was promised this land. Lo ulazarachot, to you and to your descendants I'll give this land. He doesn't have any children. Velot, Yorsho, who's the next in line? Well, Lot has one. Avram has one nephew right now. Is traveling around with him. Is Lot? He's next in line. The ain ze gezel. It is not thievery. Please, do not call us thieves. We are honorable mention. We are grazing in land that is ours. So, what's their claim? Now, their claim is. So the land is promised to Avram. They're ma'amin and b'nei ma'aminim. These are religious people. God has promised Avram the land. And they are taking God at his promise in the land. It's going to happen. Well, sort of religious people. Because they believe God in the promise that it's going to happen to Avram. But he promised Avram that he doesn't have any children. We're next in line. We're taking it now. Can you imagine making up a person, a nice gentleman, doesn't have any children of his own, but he has a beautiful car and a beautiful home. And he has a nephew. His brother has a couple of kids. They live in another city. And one day, the uncle goes away on vacation. And he comes home, and his nephews have moved into the house. Moved into the house, moved things around. They're living there. And he says, What are you doing here? And he says, This is ours. It's yours. He says, well, you don't have any children, so when you die, we're going to get it. So we decided to take it now. So I think most uncles in that scenario would probably change their will. I'm still here. What do you mean it's yours? So the shepherds of Lot hold, and this is all attributed to Lot himself, that not only are we making the jump to say, well, you don't have any children, so it's going to come to us. You could think that all you want. But they're then acting on that now, saying, it's already ours. What leads a person to that conclusion? We are strangers in this land. If you remember how long they've been there, they got from Haran, they got to Eretz Canaan. How long were they there until the famine? Couple hours, maybe. Famine starts as soon as they get there. They go down to Mitzrayim. They're on their way back now. They have not settled. They have no home yet. They're just getting back. And right away, this is ours. Who are you? Well, Avram was promised to do it. What blinds a person into that thought process? Says the Medrash, source number 4. L'taiva yivukash nifra. To he who desires or runs after lust, separates himself. Ze Lot. One who has a desire for money, oyhev kesef lo yispa kesef. One who loves money will never be satisfied. There's never enough money. You can't ever satisfy. Person who wants money will never say, I have enough money. It's impossible. Because it's something outside of the body. Now, it's pizza, you can have enough of. You can love pizza, but you can have enough of it. Because pizza is something which goes into the body. And we are human beings. We are limited. There's only so much pizza you can eat. Being in a boys' high school, that limit has been pushed. I didn't think it was so high, but there is still a limit. You cannot eat more than 5 slices. You just can't. They're just done. You know, you could serve ice cream, but there's a point where they actually put the bowl down and say, I'm done. But money's not like that, because it's not, it's always outside of you. And therefore, if you have a desire for it, you'll never satisfy. There's never a point where you say, now I have enough. Person who says, I have enough, they said they had enough last week also, and the week before that. Person who says, I didn't have enough, will never have enough. Oh, if kesef lo yuz bekesef. What causes the fight between Lot and his siblings and Avram? The land wasn't big enough. They're not big enough. How could the land not be big enough for two people and their flocks? Well, if that's what you're after, if that's what you think about, if that's what you want, the land's not big enough. It'll never be big enough. You can come to a conclusion, this land's already mine. What? How can you draw that such a conclusion? That's ridiculous, the land's already yours. Avram's still alive. Forget the fact that he might have a child, because Hashem promised, the same God that promised him the land, also promised him a child. How can you make that, and where did you draw that conclusion from? Well, if you're blinded by money, you could be blinded by money. And if you want to see an awesome example of that, which is snuck into the psukim in a way that's so obvious when you stop and think about it, but the Rosh Yeshiva pointed it out, and would never claim to have noticed this on my own. But if you look at Lot's exodus from stone, this is in next week's parsha. It's in source 5, Vayihi kohot siyam osam achutza. This is now the malachim have come, they take him outside. Vayomer himolet al nafshecha. Run, flee for your life. Al tabid acharecha. Don't look back. Al ta'amod b'chol akikar. Don't stop in the plain. Ha'hara himolet penti safer. Run to the mountain. That's what the malachim tell him. Does Lot believe the malachim that Sodom is going to be destroyed or not?
Yes.
He believes it's going to be destroyed. Should he believe him that the mountain is going to be safe if the angel that comes and tells him it's going to be destroyed tells him where it will be safe? Is that a reasonable thing that he should believe him that it will be safe? I think that is, if you believe him that it's going to be destroyed, you should believe him that this is going to be safe. Vayomer Lot aleihem. Lot says to them, Al no Adonai. My master says, no, I can't. Hineina matzah abdecha chen beinecha. You let me live. I can't make it to the mountain. Maybe the evil will catch me. There's a small little city that's closer. Mitzar, let me go there. And then Malachim responds, fine, we'll listen to you. Gamla davar hazeh. You want to run to Mitzar? Go ahead. We'll let you stay there. Maher, Himalay, Shama, go there, because we can't do anything until you get there. And so Lot runs to that little place. Now, how did Lot leave Sodom? So the Torah describes, I don't have the whole pasuk, but it's in the end of source number 4, Vayisma Hameya. He delayed on his way out of Sodom. Why did he delay? This is one of the three times in the Torah that the chop is Vayisma Hameya. Why? Because the trup is hinting at what Rashi says. Kedei lahatzil es mamoni. He couldn't get himself out. He needed to save his money. Omar, Rashi quotes, kama ibud bekesef v'zohav avonim tovos umargolios. Like, what a loss. He's like looking at the city. He's looking at a city when Avram says, separate from me. And he looks at Sodom and he sees lush, wealthy. That's where I want to be. It was rah be'inei Hashem, but it was rich. So he goes to Sodom. Now he's got to leave. So does he think it's going to be destroyed or not going to be destroyed? It is going to be destroyed. He's so afraid that he doesn't even think he can make it to the mountains where he's told it will be safe, but he begs and plead, let me go to this place called Soar. I don't even know how I can make it. But can he pull himself out of Sodom? Can't pull himself out. Why?
Stuff's there.
What a loss. What a loss. And they will have to drag him out. 4-5 psukim later, Torah describes, Pasuk Lamed, the last in source number 5. Sorry, we're going back and forth a little bit. Vaya'alot mitzoar, vayeshev bahar. He left Tzoar and he went to the mountain. Ushtevenosavimo, kiyore losheves bitzoar. Because why? He's afraid. So he went to the cave in the mountain. One little phrase there, Kiyari Leshevis Betzoar. He's afraid. So he was told to go to the mountain, and he was told it would be safe. Can he make it there? Can he make it there? So what did he beg to do? Could he get himself out of Sodom? Did he believe it was going to be destroyed? Could he pull himself away? No. Why? money. Now he gets to Tzoar. And what happens to him there? Was he told he would be safe there?
Yeah.
But he couldn't say because he was afraid. How high a level of fear would you say was when he's in Tzoar? Scale 0 to 100. How great a fear should he have had after being told by the Malach, deal, you go there, you'll be safe?
Low level.
Pretty low level. Under 10 maybe? How high a fear should he have had in Sodom before it was destroyed? In Sodom?
Well, he's got to leave because it's like an 11. He's
got to
leave right away.
No, sorry, I was talking about it was 0 to 100. And it's like if it's under 10 and on a 0 to 100 scale, right?
It's like it's a 99.
They're telling you it's going to be destroyed. You believe him. Can he get himself out of there when it's a 90 fear factor? Can he leave? No. When it's a 5 factor, can he leave? Can't even stay there. What's the difference? What does he not have in Tzoar?
Stuff.
Nothing. He has nothing with him. When he has nothing with him, what do you see? All you see is there's a little danger here. So if you're in a place with a little bit of danger and there's a place over there with no danger, what do? You leave. When you have stuff and a lot of danger,
claim all your stuff.
Different story. How blinding is stuff. If that's what you care about. If you choose Sodom rather than Avraham because of money, if you are not willing to leave your stuff, if all of that is how you live, so then you are completely blinded by that, and the decision-making capability, your fear factor, is blinded by that stuff and your desire to have that stuff.
Jews in Germany.
Jews in America.
Yeah, we can bring lots of examples. But I would encourage you to do is instead of finding examples out there, try to think of the examples that are a little bit closer to home. But you don't have to share those with everybody, but I'm just saying that this is blinding. Rosh Hashiva concluded as follows. Rav Dessler has a very oft-quoted piece in his Michta Meliyahu. Dessler discusses the concept of free will. And he describes it as a war. Everybody has free will, he writes. But free will is like a war, but it's like the old-fashioned war, like the way the Civil War was fought. There are two armies, and each army has a battle line. This is our line of defense, and this is your line of defense, and my people are safe back here, your people are safe back here. There's a little neutral zone, and then we clash. Wars aren't necessarily fought this way anymore. The world has changed, technology has changed, but that's the way that it used to be fought. So Rav Dessler uses that paradigm to describe every person has free will, but the only place where we really have the concept of free will is where those two battle lines clash. And that the two lines are our understanding of truth and that which is right, and our understanding of falsehood and that which is wrong. And every person has clearly demarcated lines of that which they understand and do because it's so obvious to them as right, and those things which are so beyond them, they don't even think about it. It doesn't enter into their minds as something that they should do. And free will is right in that point in the middle. I translated his critical paragraph on the bottom of the second page. Every person has a point. It's what he calls the Nekuda Sabachira, the point of free will. The place where his understanding of truth clashes with his sense of falsehood. But most of his actions do not relate to this at all. If I ask most people in our shul, let me take an example. Did you light Shabbos candles this week? So they'll say, yeah. Was that a struggle? Did you think yes? Did you think no? So most people, I think, in our shul, using that, they'll say, I don't know. I lit Shabbos last week and the last before that and the week before that. And why did you do that? Because of Shabbos. I'm not saying it's not meaningful that you don't think about it, but it wasn't a battle, should I or shouldn't I? Because that's something that's on your side. That's what I do. I keep Shabbos. I want to keep Shabbos. I like candles. That's part of my keeping Shabbos. Am I going to keep Shabbos this week? I don't debate that. That's what I do. Then there are other things which we don't even think about, which we're doing wrong, which are beyond. I don't even think about it. I could tell you stories, I'm not going to choose specific examples, of things which are done in, I don't know, other communities or other times in our history, what was standard, and we don't even talk about it because it's not in our world, it's not in our mindset of how we behave. I'll use an example for that doesn't apply to any of you, so it's an easy one. Wearing tefillin all day. It used to be a thing that men would wear tefillin all day. Why don't we do that anymore? Because we could not possibly function. The type of thought process that a person is supposed to have when they're wearing their tefillin is such that we really shouldn't even be wearing tefillin for all of Shacharis. We should do it for Mincha, because maybe then we could succeed for 12 minutes. 45 minutes of Shacharis is impossible, but because we're supposed to do it early in the day, right away, so we do Shacharis. But it really should be Mincha, because we can't. So I don't know anyone who's thought about wearing tefillin all day. I don't know anybody who knows that. So I was like, well, why don't you do that? And I didn't think about it. It wasn't something that I struggled with. Should I do it today? Should I not do it? Can I manage? Who thinks about that? It's beyond me. Says Rav Dessler, but there are many actions that are on the side of truth that he has already been trained or educated to do. This is what I do. And it would never occur to him to do otherwise. And there are many actions that are wrong or inappropriate, and he has no awareness of what he's doing. Kashrus is a great example of this. Kashrus is a great example. There are people who are brought up eating kosher. Those people who are so privileged to be brought up in a home that keeps kosher and always has kept kosher, pass McDonald's and Wendy's on the street and don't even know that they're there. Like, if you'd say to them, what restaurants are on Druid, when you make a left on Druid Hills to get between Druid Hills and 85, which restaurants do you pass? I'm pretty confident there are a great number of people who grew up in kosher. No idea. I don't know. Maybe they remember a sign or two, but like to list them. Somebody who doesn't keep kosher who drives that route, I know all of them. Somebody who grew up not keeping kosher and then started keeping kosher will go through a period where it's a real battle. I should do this. I'm not ready to do it. I do it on weekends, not on weekdays. I do it at home. There's this battle of being able to do so. As they struggle, that's a real battle. And then eventually, if they're successful, it becomes not a battle anymore. That concept, just using that as a paradigm, says of Desser, there are many people for whom passing McDonald's and Wendy's and Subway and whatever else is there, that bagel place and Piccadillo, there are all sorts of things. There. Whatever's there.
Not the emails.
What is it? Whatever it is, it's not a test, it's not hard, I don't think about it, it's not anything I've contemplated, I'm not interested, it's not part of my world. It's on my side of good, I don't think about it. There are others who are Jewish people, are not keeping kosher, and they don't even think about that they're not keeping kosher. It's not in their world either. They don't think about it. I don't keep kosher. It's not a struggle. And then there are the people for whom that's their nekudas habechir, that's their battle line. Every time they drive past it, it's a struggle. And it's a back and forth battle until it goes one way or the other. And it might stay as a battle for 20 years. And then eventually either you win, then it goes back to battle. But while it's a battle, it's a battle. That's an example. Every single one of us has that in every aspect of our life. It's just in different places. And it implies in our life, in kashrus, for some of us, it's how carefully do I check a piece of lettuce? For some of us, it's how careful am I to pay attention? Is it 6 hours? Is it not 6 hours? For some of us, it's keeping kosher. It's this product doesn't really need a hechsher, I think. This product doesn't need to be checked, I think. There, every aspect. Somebody, all of us, in different places, have a point where this is what I do. I don't think about it. And this is what I would never think about. This is where there's that voice inside my head that says, you know better. You know that you should be doing more. That's where the battle is. That's where you have free will. Beyond that, not free will. That's what you do. That's what you've been trained to do. And it's in every aspect of our life. In Shabbos, it applies in 1,000 different worlds of Shabbos. Keeping Shabbos, yes. This halacha, that halacha. You know, there are always places where there's that little voice of, I think I should be doing this differently. I'll ask about it some other time. But there's just that battle where we struggle. I should be doing this. I shouldn't be doing this. And it's in a different place for every single person. And it doesn't stay static. It moves throughout our life. But that's the point where the Bechira, free will, applies. Only in that point where we struggle. Beyond that, as in the language of Rav Dessler, we've been mechunach. We've been trained to do. There's a great question that I remember when I was in camp. I don't remember how old I was. I don't know, 13, 14, 15. I was in a camp right near a conservative BBYO camp. And the two camps ran a program together where they brought all the kids together, and we had a sports program, and then it was a lot of conversation and dialogue and interesting things. And one of the conversation parts were a question was raised. I remember in my session, I think I was older, I was post high school already. I think I was a counselor at that point. Whatever it was who's a better Jew in heaven's eyes? The Jew who's born into a family in Borough Park and was brought up from an all Alagutamalas. And if we put on a scale of 0 to 100, 100 being the best, was raised to a 90. That was his chinuch, that was his training, everything. And as he go over, he dropped a little bit, and he ended up as an 85. Pretty good in 85, but if you look at it from where he started, he was doing less than what he was actually brought up to do. And you have a Jew who lives out in Iowa somewhere, there's no Jew, not even a Chabad, anywhere near him, and he heard from his grandmother that he's Jewish, and he did a little bit of research, and he found out he was Jewish. He was born at a 3, his parents told him he was Jewish, but he did something. He started keeping what he thought was Shabbos, which meant, you know, whatever it was that he did, which had no real semblance of Shabbos. He raised himself from a 3 to a 5. And these two Jews die after 120, they go up to heaven. One Jew is an 85, and one Jew is a 5. Except the 85 Jew started as a 90 and went down to a 5. And the Jew who is a 5 started as a 3 and went up to a 5. Who's the better Jew? Very complicated question. Very complicated question, because there are two scales that we look at. One scale is, well, an 85 is an 85. This is what you're doing. We're required to do things, and you did. And this is, you only did a 5. But there's another scale of, who are you?
Each one had different challenges.
Correct. You know, there's reward we get for mitzvos, and the 85 is far greater than a 5. There's no question about it. But I want to know who you, and Shemaim, they're going to ask, who are you? Not just what kind of reward you get for them. Who are you? And in that question, one Jew is a -5, and one Jew is a +2. And we don't look at anything else other than that. Now, how that jives with the schar, I can't figure that out. That's not my job. I don't have to figure that out. That's God's problem. But when we ask the who are you question, who are you, which is a question they're going to ask, so there, the only question is, where did you start? And then who are you? Everything that you start with. Ashreichem, how praiseworthy are you to start at a high level? But everyone has a starting point, and then the question is, okay, now that you've come of age, what did you do with what you were given? And it's far better to be a +2 than a -5. How that fits in, that I can't answer. But there's an aspect of who you are. Says Rav Dessler, what you got from your training doesn't count or help you in that. That's not who you are. That's Chanoch Lenar Al Pi Darko. Train the children. It's our job to give our children the highest possible starting point so that when they begin to grow, they're already far closer to where they need to get to. But it's irrelevant where we started, where we were born into, what generation, what city, what parents. Who are we? And what makes us who we are? The Nekudas Abchir. Wherever your point was, that tomorrow it's higher. And the next day it's higher. It doesn't matter where it starts, and it's not the same for any of us. But all that matters is what you do with it. Said the Rosh Hashiva, we know two things about Lot. He was brought up in the house of Avraham, and he loved money. And he gets down to Mitzrayim, and Avraham says, that's my sister. And Lot knows. And Lot has two choices. His choices are either say, and what does he think he'll get for that?
Money.
A lot of money. A lot of riches. He'll become, as you mentioned, this is his deal. What's going to happen to Avraham? Probably nothing good. But we know Lot's decision-making process when it comes to money is a little bit warped. When it comes to saving his own life, could barely get himself out of stone. When he brought in guests, where did he get that from? As the Medrash points out, literally, step by step by step, everything of Avraham. How do we know that it was something that he was trained to do and not something that was the essence of who he was? When they say, give him to us, and he says, no, I'm going to protect them, but what can you have instead? Give me my daughter. Wait a minute.
That's not Avraham.
Wait a minute. That doesn't... it's like blinders. Protect your guests. Protect your guests. Protect your guests. Your own daughters, whatever. I learned from the house of Avraham, we protect my, I protect my guests. And when I, like, I'll throw my daughters out. That's not the, that's not, you, there's no kinyan, no acquisition of a trait of chesed that would do that. But he learned from the house of Avraham. So when Chazal are looking for the schus, and they say, where's the merit that he has to get out of Sodom? They don't go to what he did in Sodom to take in the guests, which was learned from the house of Avraham, but they do go to Mitzrayim. Because in Mitzrayim, when Lot had the ability to open up his mouth and turn in Avraham and Sarah in his mind for great wealth, and he didn't, that's him. That's his conquering a Nekudus HaBechira moment to say, I'm going to do the right thing at great cost to myself. I have the opportunity to become wealthy in this, and I won't because Avraham, it wouldn't be the right thing to do. In Sodom, the action is Chanoch Lana. That's a manifestation of the training that he had been given by Avraham and doesn't stand for him in the same way as the guest.
How do we know that he didn't get the love for wealth only after he had wealth, which he didn't have when he went down to Egypt? He only had it when he left Egypt.
Certainly possible. I can't bring you a proof to that because all of the we have no interaction with him until then. That's really our first experience with him, other than the fact when you see such a pattern. So it would seem like that's, you know, part of who he was. But I can't. You always kesef lo yuspa kesef. You'll never be satisfied. So it seemed like if he didn't. So somebody who did not have that, who got all this money, would say, this is amazing, I'm so appreciative of what I have. But it was always just more and more and more and more, which is certainly indicative of that character trait always having been there. But I can't point to something.
So when people win the lottery and they had nothing, they were okay with having nothing, but then when they get the money, they usually end up in debt because they spend too much, they go through it.
Right, but that's different.
Too much for love.
I know, but that's different. The spending, it's not the same as always trying to hoard more and more and more and more. It's a different trait. Yeah, that's how Rosh Yeshiva learns that particular medrash. That's true. That's the traits of, you know, as you said, Jews in Germany and Jews in America being blinded by money is applicable to all of us, and recognizing where we are always in life. Whenever you feel that struggle, that's your nekuda. That's the point of free will. That's life. That moment is not the moment to brush aside. That is what life is. Everything else is easy. We like to stay in the easy part, but it's where we feel that tension in our mind. That's the Nekudas HaBechira, that battle between that which we know we should be doing and that which we actually are doing. Fight it. That is who you are. All right, have a great night.
Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.